Monday afternoon, October 9th, an absolutely beautiful day, another beautiful day in the beautiful city of Chicago. We're sitting here in the Allstate Showcase studio. Philip Weiss will be along a little bit later. He's the managing director of Seyfarth Shaw at Work and talks about lawsuits businesses face and ways to stay out of trouble and things like that. I tease him sometimes, but we're going to talk about Halloween parties and costumes and how to stay out of trouble. Randy Schaefer will be along like she is most Mondays, talking about what's going on in social media. But we always start on Mondays with the folks from Chicago Inno. And in the studio today, we have Jim Dahlke is here, Catherine Davis as well. And you guys started something new today, right, on the opening bell, right? Catherine, you did it.
Yeah, so we did like a 60-second reel of top headlines from Friday.
So the Chicago Inno Minute will be on the opening bell every morning now with Steve Brzanich.
That's right. Every morning, Monday through Friday, we have really enjoyed our Mondays with you, Steve, and now we want to just keep doing it every day.
I don't feel cheated on at all. It's okay. And there's enough Inno to go around. Okay, so I'm reading about the stories you guys sent me over, and I'm reading blah, 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 and I come across the description of the RX bar, because we talk about RX bar a lot. I'm like, oh my God, I love these things. I had no idea what I was eating. In fact, my wife Sharon gave me one last night. I was introduced to RX bars at our 4th of July parade. Someone was throwing them from a float. And I'm like, how cool is this? It's like five ingredients listed on the package. Mm-hmm. We've talked about it a lot. And now here it is. They were taken over or sold to Kellogg last week for big bucks.
Yeah. So the Chicago Bar Company, maker of the RX bar, they were acquired by Kellogg for $600 million. This is a really big exit for them and a big exit sale for a Chicago startup. According to the deal terms, RX bar will continue to operate independently. So it should be interesting to see how that
Is a company, as I recall, because we do talk about them a lot, they started at CrossFit gyms and just grew from there.
Exactly, yeah. The four-year-old company kind of started with the CrossFit thing, did some online sales, finally got, last year, got into some of the retailers. So now they're in the Whole Foods and the Targets and whatnot. And it's a really interesting example of a company that just really, really hit a home run with its brand. They have the simple packaging. The ingredients are in big, bold lettering right in the front on a package. It says no BS. That's like the fourth ingredient in what they sell. So it's a company that just like crushed the brand, had a startup exit that entrepreneurs dream of. They're going to remain an independent company in Chicago. They are growing. They're adding employees. This isn't a typical tech startup that we write about, but they are a startup, and it's one of a home run exit for these guys.
So to continue to tell you too much about myself, I've given up sugar for this month, following Bill Leff, and he does it. So we've given up sugar to our house, added sugar, not natural sugars, and this bar is perfect for that. I mean, it's just five ingredients. It's got dried fruit, but it's got no added sugar, no corn syrup or anything like that.
Exactly. Yeah, you're talking eggs, dates, nuts, and it's all just right in front of you. So I mean, you know what you're getting when you get one. And it's what's so impressive about it is that you go to Whole Foods and there is a shelf of like 400
gazillion of them.
So making breaking out of that mold, right, and like really kind of climbing to the top. They are the fastest growing nutrition bar and the third best-selling on Amazon.
And I think they did it with their packaging. I think if you list just those four or five ingredients, it it's there and it sells it.
Right. And I think nutrition bars are just like really popular right now.
I know, but they're like you said, it's too hard to figure out, and it's right there.
Exactly.
Okay, Grommet is this marketplace. It's a place where startups sort of go to get noticed, and Ace Hardware, which has never really purchased a startup, jumped in with Grommet last week.
That's right. Yeah, Oak Brook-based Ace bought its first ever startup in the 93-year history of the company. They acquired the Grommet, and the Grommet is an online site that showcases new products created by entrepreneurs. Actually, they were kind of the launching pad for brands like Fitbit, OtterBox, and SodaStream. So products that you see and use all the time were kind of sort of initially incubated sort of on this site.
So they were on that site to be sold, right?
Right.
So instead of going to Amazon or something, you go to see what's new, what's being developed on the Grommet.
Exactly.
And now Ace jumps in with them, and I would imagine that gives the Grommet a boost because they'll be more widely seen, but it also is sort of a pipeline for Ace when it comes to new products.
Yeah, Ace said that they've seen a boost in foot traffic in their stores since Grommet displays have been in there. And the acquisition makes sense because in 2016 they started working together. And grommet displays were in 408 stores. And so going forward, they plan to have grommet displays in most of their stores.
And the research shows that grommet customers tend to stay in the stores longer and spend more money.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And what Ace is really doing is kind of using the grommet's online site to see which products are really hitting off with consumers. So then they sort of use that data, use that information to take those online products, bring them offline, bring them into the store, and kind of use the grommet as a sort of tool to determine, hey, this is what's hot with our customers.
So does this mean that the next Fitbit will be available at Ace Hardware's first? I mean, right? They're going to have probably a stranglehold on those products.
So really focusing on the entrepreneur products that are within the Ace brand. So this is your home hardware sort of tool stuff. So I don't know if you're going to see the Fitbit, but you're going to see the hardware equivalent of that on Ace shelves.
Either way, if it's SodaStream or whatever, the Ace Hardware stores are going to have a sort of, I would imagine, a first line in.
That's the idea. And the idea behind that, too, is that it's great for entrepreneurs. So the entrepreneur goes to the grommet to showcase their site. The next thing they know, they're on the shelves of Ace.
We only have a minute here in this next segment, but Catherine, you wrote a really cool story about Sean Naismith. Naismith is a familiar name. The great-great-grandson?
He's a great-grandson.
Great-grandson.
Dr. James Naismith, who invented the game of basketball in 1891. So Sean works here in Chicago Tech. He's the head of analytic services at Innova Decisions, and they help companies with loan approval, credit lines, things like that. So we wanted to do this profile because it was an interesting look at, a Chicago tech executive with an interesting family history.
And so I'm thinking, well, the poor guy, his grandfather, great-grandfather, invents this sport that so many people are making millions off of, and I'm sure they got nothing. They did get something. They actually owned the rules to basketball?
They owned the original 13 rules, and they sold it in 2010 for $4.3 million.
That's amazing to me. I didn't realize that you could own. I mean, of course you can own a game, but that they owned it and sold it. And then they gave the money to help further basketball, I think, in the Caribbean.
Yes.
And Jim, he is one of the 50 on fire, or he wants to be one of the 50 on fire?
That's right. So Sean Naismith is a finalist for 50 on fire. So we have 150 finalists for our big end-of-year award show, and we're going to narrow it down to 50, both people and employees. So this is just a great example of how we're sort of highlighting maybe some lesser-known folks within the tech community that you might not be aware of, both people and companies.
Yeah, it's a cool story. Check it out, AmericanInno.com, right? That's the best place to...
ChicagoInno.com.
ChicagoInno.com. Okay. I need a Tuesday because I've got a Monday's very bad. Jim Dahlke and Catherine Davis are in the studio from Chicago Inno. Okay. So I was teasing with Bill and Wendy that there soon will be an electric airline like the Tesla drives around on the roads. There'll be jets above flying on electricity?
Yeah, so imagine like a Tesla for the skies, basically. So this is a battery-powered airplane startup called Zunum Aero, and they're Seattle-based. Okay. But they actually have a lot of Chicago's ties.
So they're Seattle, is that Boeing-related?
So Boeing is a backer of them, but they're not really a Boeing company. Okay. So they are based in Seattle, and they aren't based here, but they're really growing their Chicago presence. Their co-founder actually is an electrical engineering professor at the University of Illinois. They have a partnership with the U of I-led Research Center on battery density. And then just earlier this year, they hired a Rockford-based aerospace engineer as to be their new CTO.
Okay, what's the point?
So the point is, we in Chicago, we're going to have two development centers that are working.
That's the point of your story, but why do we need an electric airline?
Well, first of
what do they want to do? It's
environmentally friendly, so we're not pumping pollutants into the air. And really, the point of this company is to sort of revitalize these regional airports. So this isn't going to O'Hare, to Miami. This is going to hit a lot of those regional airports, and it's going to cut down on a lot of the door-to-door time, the travel times.
Right. Well, will they beep so that we know when they're landing?
Yeah, they're silent, just like a Tesla.
I actually did think of that. I'm like, well, what will that sound like in the air? It won't sound any different. You're still going to hear the turbines going.
Yeah. I mean, so what's interesting about these guys, too, is these aren't your huge aircrafts. Like right now, it's just a 12-person aircraft. So you're not going to have these like big jets quite yet, but they're really getting the price down.
It's going to happen.
Yeah, so it's happening. So they're going to have tests are going to begin in 2019. They just announced their official timeline, and they're going to make flights available to passengers in 2022.
So, Catherine, why would Boeing or the other airlines behind it, too? Why would they be behind this?
Yeah, Boeing and JetBlue are both behind it, and I think what Jim said is relevant about them being environmentally friendly, being cheaper options for consumers, and so considering that those big airlines put money behind them, I think it's possible that we're going to see electric airlines in the future.
You wrote a piece, Catherine, I'm pointing at you for everyone at home, about this TV startup or streaming startup called Industry with an I instead of a U, local, and they want to be sort of an original programming, sort of like Netflix or what, Hulu? What's this about?
Yeah, so Industry TV, they launched in beta mode late last month, and they have a hefty mission to produce and curate all of their own content. So different from Netflix and Hulu, who get content from big networks, you know, that have
stuff
ABC shows.
We might have watched on HBO, we can watch on Hulu
later. Right. Industry will be different, so it'll be all original content that you can't see anywhere else. So they're going to have TV shows, movies, live stream events, emerging artists, and Industry Talks, which is their version of TED Talks. And, you know, a really interesting part about them that's setting them apart is that they're going to be interactive. So they're giving viewers an opportunity to buy products that they're seeing in TV shows or in music videos.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Uh-huh. And they can share what they're watching on Twitter or Facebook.
Will I be allowed to watch, or am I too old?
You'll be allowed to watch.
You sure? Because aren't they all about the millennials?
Well, they are targeting millennials, but, you know, I'm sure that they'll have some.
They'll make an exception?
They'll have some.
There's a no olds allowed.
Right. Yeah. And so these guys are going to make it?
We'll see. I mean, it's going to depend on the programming, right? I mean, are they going to have the interesting content that's going to draw viewers? They're starting with 60 original pieces of content, which is pretty ambitious, right? So, and I think that what they're going to do differently is kind of be the indie version of Netflix. So this is kind of indie documentarians, indie TV shows, and really create a different platform.
And
for
even though it's all original, they're taking products that others have produced, right? So if I made a film in my basement or an independent film company, I could go there and get a chance. But then I would give up my right to market it elsewhere.
Yes.
So it's an exclusive to Industry TV. So, yeah, so it's also kind of like user-submitted. So, I mean, they're doing something, they're producing their own stuff, but also taking submissions.
So like $8 a month, are they up and running?
Yep, they're up and running. You can get an account today.
All right, I will. I'll see if they approve me. That's Catherine Davis, Jim Dahlke from Chicago Inno. They come by on Mondays, but now every weekday morning on the morning bell, the opening bell. I'm sorry, I have a hard time with that. The opening bell with Steve Grzanich, what do you call it?
The Inno Minute.
The Inno Minute. Tune in tomorrow. I heard today's. It was great. It was Catherine.
Yeah.
Are you going to do some too?
It'll be a little worse tomorrow. Yeah.
It'll be dull. Yeah, good. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Hey, I want to thank all of you who went out to the Chicago Podcast Festival to watch the Mincing Rascals. Getting to Yes And was a podcast as well with us at the Old Town School of Folk Music with Kelly Leonard. I think Kelly's on tomorrow, right? Kelly will be on with us tomorrow talking about his podcast. Nick DiGilio and his on Air family was there as well, all on Saturday night. So thanks for showing up for that. It was a lot of fun. Philip Weiss is in the studio. He is the managing director of Seyfarth Shaw at Work. And, well, Philip and I first got acquainted a few years ago. Philip, welcome.
Good to be here.
A few years ago when you would come in, talk about the dangers of holiday parties and things. And I kind of, you know, I would make fun of you.
You still do on occasion.
I don't, not nearly as much.
It's not all over.
No, I don't, because it is over, because I have a greater appreciation now about it and about how businesses have to be aware, right? So Halloween is coming up. It doesn't feel like it right now, but I can see you have your costume on. Well, I guess I haven't quit. But so this is something businesses need to be aware of, right? Halloween parties and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And we actually conducted a survey recently. And we told people, you got to think back to former Halloweens, because we want to know really caught you unaware. And interestingly, we positioned this as a business question. What affected your business? We got all kinds of answers. So people were thinking about their kids, their families, when they actually opened their door to trick-or-treaters,
right,
as well as what happened at work.
And so if I didn't make it clear at the beginning, you advise businesses about how to stay out of trouble, right? How to avoid trouble.
That's exactly right. We try to keep these pieces of strategy as simple as possible and proactive. So our coming in early, 2 weeks, 3 weeks,
right,
is probably a good idea.
Is Halloween a tricky holiday for
you? Clever.
I didn't even mean
clever.
That. No, quit it.
Yeah. And speaking of clever, it's supposed to be a clever, sort of clownish, maybe creepy.
Hey, what are you? Right,
that sort of thing. But it can turn catastrophic, and that's really where we come in. Hopefully before that point, and often, sadly, afterwards. And what we found is, even something as simple as opening your door to trick-or-treaters or opening your business, for example, as a haunted house, can create really surprising risks. One of our clients, a new client, came to us. They were a restaurant, and they thought it would be clever to have what they called a fright feast.
Mm.
And so they divided their staff into two groups, what they called the standard staff, dressed like I'm dressed today. I'm not actually in a costume. But
I'm sorry.
Yeah, dressed well, hopefully. And then they had what they call the scary staff, with dangling eyeballs and, you know, fluorescent blood all over.
Right. And I'll have the fettuccine. Right.
Well, yes, right. And where is it? Is it on you or in my plate?
Right.
And what they did is they unexpectedly turned off the lights halfway between their diner's meals, and the staff switched. And the scary staff came lunging
okay, but
at patrons.
But wasn't the staff, weren't the patrons sort of warned this was coming?
Well, that would have been a great idea, and as a lawyer, I would have strongly advised that. Instead, they told potential patrons, this is going to be a festive, surprising way to celebrate Halloween, and we're just going to call it the Frightful Feast. People actually thought, maybe I'll get some costumes, a skeleton, and an orange cupcake. They didn't think that their children would be terrified out of their wits.
Oh, it was a children's place, too.
Anatomic bats on the serving trays being thrust in people's faces in the dark. So people, it was all meant to be fake, but the indigestion was more real life.
Okay, so we'll put that one in the no column.
No, or warn people with some clear language on what to expect.
Office parties?
Office parties are a problem, and that's not as much because of the fear that you instill in your employees, but in terms of how you encourage them to dress up or dress up yourself.
Well, that's the thing, too, because it's become sort of a risque holiday.
It has. And if you look at what's available at the party stores or the costume stores, a lot of those outfits cross a line. And that may be fine for a family or close friend event, but employees don't realize it doesn't belong in the workplace. So whether it is something that is too revealing, maybe has a religious connotation, or even the case of a boss. We had a manager came to us for help because he had been at a party the night before.
Right.
And he just reused the outfit the day after.
Okay, I'm
going
to pause there. I want everyone to listen to this very carefully. Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
I love this story.
I might slow it down.
No, I love this story.
So he was at a party with friends and had gone to the party as the Grim Reaper.
Right.
With white makeup, blackened eyes, even sort of the skeleton teeth drawn on. And he already had kind of a palish Voldemort-like face, so he certainly fit the description. So then he thought, this was a huge hit with my friends. I'll just keep the costume tomorrow morning at work as the boss, Grim Reaper.
Sure.
He didn't remember that 2 days before, his own human resource team had terminated two beloved long-term employees.
Bad idea.
Yes. So the one person who's ultimately responsible for all hiring decisions came as the Grim Reaper.
Okay, so in your business where you're advising people, it just struck me that way because you have to be sort of super aware of how not to get in trouble.
That's right.
And I would imagine if you're someone who drives a business or creates a business, you probably don't worry that much about getting – you have to have – some of that has to be lacking in your brain to sort of forge ahead with newness, right, or new ideas. Right? Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And what's interesting about being creative in terms of developing a product or encouraging employees to think outside the box, that we should encourage on a daily basis.
Right.
But when you're dealing with something that is outside the realm of the typical business or its operations, you have to take that pause, that moment, that planning process to avoid these kind of mishaps.
But see, I guess that's kind of my point then. So these aren't that sort of animal in some ways, right? They're thoroughbreds racing toward innovation in many ways, not worried about who's going to sue them.
Yeah, and to that point, if you look at the startups, the tech companies, because we work with a lot of them, they're not big on Halloween fests at work.
Really?
Yeah, this is more what you see in a lot of service industries, old mainline traditional industries,
right?
Actually, companies that have celebrated Halloween for many, many years.
Why is that? So the younger companies don't do it.
They will do it, but it's far less of an issue. They've got issues in other areas, such as how to manage employees, because they don't have the experience. Sometimes the growth is so fast, they're focusing on growth, not Halloween. That can be a good thing, but a bad thing.
Philip Weiss is the managing director, Seyfarth Shaw at Work. Okay, so we can have a Halloween party. Just be careful of the costumes. Not too sexy, not too political, not too scary. We can bob for apples, can't bob for apples.
I wouldn't, because there's always a drowning risk. So if you have to ask me, I'm putting your head in the water. I'm going to be honest with you.
I live half my life with my head in the water. Thanks very much for coming by.
Thanks so much.
12:52 on this beautiful Monday afternoon. In the studio is Randy Schaefer. She's a digital news editor for ChicagoTribune.com. Comes by on most Mondays to talk about what's hip in the world of social media, because she's so hip.
I'm not sure I'm hip, but I do love social media.
Okay, so we were just hanging off the air, and one of the things we're going to talk about are these Plandids, which are, where do we find Plandids?
Mashable says Planded is a planned candid.
But so they're on Instagram or, yes. Or I guess they could be anywhere.
Yeah, anywhere you can post a photo, but usually Instagram.
See what I mean? Off the air, I said, I'll come up with the thoughts, but you have to give me the words because I'm just having
a
hard time.
I will try to word.
We were talking about the rainbow over the weekend, the double rainbow on Saturday. And I figured that has got to be about the most posted thing in Chicago since the
Cubs won the World Series?
Cubs won the World Series.
We'll go with that.
I mean, I saw, we were driving down the Edens, and my wife Sharon's in the car, and she's taking pictures. We're driving down, we see people standing along the road taking pictures of the double rainbow.
Yeah, it was, I was just telling you off the air, got a few planteds in. My boyfriend, Armando Sanchez, he's a photographer for the Tribune, and he saw the double rainbow and hadn't seen one before, immediately grabbed his camera, and I had to chase him across the city to the lakefront so he could snap these photos. And of course, I'm, you know, perched on the rocks saying, hey, right. Get some photos of me looking at the rainbow from behind.
And so that brings us to planteds. What the heck are planteds?
So it's basically exactly how it sounds, a planned candid where the subject of the photo is, you know, you're kind of like laughing with your friends or, you know, you're intently reading a book and you know this photo is being taken, but you're pretending that you're not.
So you're not necessarily facing the camera smiling.
Right, right. It's not a portrait. It's just kind of a planned candid.
You're nursing the injured along the path or something like that. Look how caring she is.
Yes, exactly.
And this is a good thing or a bad thing?
You know, it kind of depends. I don't really think it's good or bad. Obviously, for journalism, it's bad. We don't stage photos. That's not something we do. But, you know, if you're just looking to take a shot of a rainbow and, you know, your boyfriend happens to be standing behind you with a camera, by all means, look at the rainbow and have him take a picture.
Are people looking down on planteds?
I haven't really seen too many people. Actually, when I post them, they get more likes than regular photos.
Nah, I think I hate posing for pictures, so I'm all for the planted.
Exactly. If you don't have to, like, awkwardly smile at the camera, I think it's a good thing.
Okay, I want everyone to follow me on Instagram. I'm making a concerted effort to be more Instagrammable.
Up your planted game?
I really want to up my Instagram game. And so there are polls you can put on Instagram. So I went to the Highwood Pumpkin Festival as threatened over the weekend. We had a great time up there. I posted a lot of pictures, so I could put a picture of a pumpkin up there and say, do you like this pumpkin or do you hate this pumpkin? Create a poll like that.
Yeah, or you could, how should I carve this pumpkin? Should I make it scary or should I make it fun? But yes, the new Instagram update, and Mashable has this story as well, has polls on your Instagram stories. So you can put a sticker on and basically ask your followers. But a lot of people don't realize this. Unlike Twitter polls, you can see how people vote in your
poll. Well, I think the idea is most of you taking a poll, if it's a poll, it's an anonymous poll.
Right, right. But not in the case of Instagram stories. So if you're asking your followers, am I a jerk? You know, and you're thinking about voting in that poll, maybe don't do that.
Is my daughter the cutest baby in the world? You don't want to vote no against that.
You don't want to vote no against that.
Because mom's going to see that, and then there's going to be trouble.
There will be. You do not mess with
moms. Or maybe dad, right? There was an NPR story about a dad who works in digital media, and he meant to post something on his private account. He ended up posting it on the NPR account.
Ramona.
Tell me about Ramona.
So this is every social media manager's worst fear. I have this fear instilled in me from day one. Accidentally posting to your branded account something that you wanted to post to your personal account. And this happened to NPR. Editor Christopher Dean Hopkins meant to post about Ramona being given a toy.
Who's his one-year-old?
His one-year-old, yes. Being given a toy and then feigning disinterest and then being hugged and then not caring and then seeing cats and just shrieking and running after the cats as the cats flee. Left it up for 15 minutes, and people were wondering, who is Ramona? Is Ramona a cat? Is Ramona a kid? So he kind of came out and was just like, sorry, Ramona, she's not a year old. She's my daughter. And everybody loved it.
So Ramona, in a way, really took off digital media-wise for NPR.
Yeah, and people were just so excited to see something other than doom and gloom, and they love seeing this positive thing, and it was Ramona brightening our days.
All right, and is he giving them more Ramona?
They kind of left it ambiguous. They said maybe, but they don't really want to detract from NPR's main goal, which is understandable.
Randy Schaefer from the Chicago Tribune, thanks for coming by.
Thank you for having me.